The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
And today I have a great guest with me, a woman by the name of Eve Ansler. And before we talk to Eve, I want to tell you a little bit about her. Eve Ansler is an internationally best-selling author and an award-winning playwright whose work includes The Vagina Monologues, The Good Body, Insecure at Last, and I Am an Emotional Creature. I love that because I'm an emotional creature myself. She is also the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, and I am proud to announce that in 2002, I was part of that group that put on what is known as the Vagina Monologues in Petaluma, which was so exciting to even be able to talk about being a woman, talk about the vagina, and talk about all the interesting things that surround just being a woman, period. Like I said, she's the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, which has raised more than $90 million for local groups and activists and inspired the global action 1 million rising. And as many of you know, here at KBBF, we had so much coverage on the 1 billion rising, and also Women's Spaces did a live show. And on the next Women's Spaces, we're going to have a woman by the name of Potenza, who actually designed a heart for the occasion. And another thing that is so wonderful about Eve, she is also considered one of the 150 women by Newsweek who changed the world. And on April 26, Eve Ansler began a 19-city tour starting in New Mexico and finishing in Miami, Florida. She will also be appearing in our area at the Dominican College down the street in San Rafael. I'll talk about her new book, In the Body of the World. Welcome. Welcome, Eve. Welcome to Women's Space.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Good morning. It's such a beautiful morning.
Oh, it definitely is. And it's so exciting to have you. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for blessing Sonoma County and KBBF for allowing this interview to happen. You know, I introduced you and I was wondering, is there anything else that you'd like to add? I mean, I was so, it's just the idea that you are considered one of the 150 women of the world who changed the world. It's just amazing to me.
Oh, I just think the most important thing is be alive. That's what I'm happy about.
Well, you know, talking about being alive, you know, I read your book. I read it when Melanie from Holt Publication contacted me, and we talked to each other. She says one of the requirements you had was that whoever interviews you read the book. And so I thought, oh my goodness, I got to read this book and I got to find time for it. Anyway, I sat down and I read the book from cover to cover, and I want you to know that I was totally inspired, and it was just extraordinarily open and extraordinarily honest, and my hat goes off to you for writing such a great work. But before we get into the book, let's talk a little bit about the Vagina Monologues. I mean, I had no idea that you won a Tony Award for that.
Well, I didn't win it for the Vagina Monologues. I actually won it later, and the Tony Award was the Isabel Stevenson Award for humanitarian good that one has done in the theater community. So I won an Obie for the Vagina Monologues.
Oh, well, congratulations. I mean, just reading your history was amazing. Well, can you give us a little background? You know, what inspired you? I mean, that was such a big step for a woman to take, you know, to even discuss the vagina. I mean, you put that word on the map. So can you give us a little idea of what inspired you and what was your motivation behind it?
I think it was just curiosity. You know, I was talking to a woman about menopause, and we got onto the subject of her vagina, and she just said these terrible things about her vagina that was finished and dead and dried up, and I was shocked. And I after talking to her, I realized that I didn't know what other women thought, so I just started casually saying to friends, well, what do you think of your vagina? And that was the beginning, and then everything that every woman said was so either surprising or funny or weird or bizarre or sad. I just started taking notes, but I didn't even know why I was taking notes. It just was interesting. And then I interviewed a woman who, an older woman, I talked to an older woman who had had a very humiliating experience when she was a young woman and she had never had sex again. And I was in shock. And that's when I really began to say, wait, there's something here.
Oh, what, you know, this older woman you're talking about, you know, I was in the Vagina Monologues in 2002 in Petaluma. Was that the flood that you were talking
yes,
about?
Yes, that was the flood.
Right.
Yes.
I remember reading it, and when I read it after it was over, I just started crying. It was so touching. So what in, and then, so you wrote the book, and rather you wrote the play, and then you, did you, what happened after that?
Well, once I started to perform the play in a little theater way downtown, everything just happened. It was, you know, I've been a playwright for a long time. I've been writing plays about homeless women and nuclear war and all kinds of subjects that were not commercial fare. But there was something about the vagina and talking about vaginas that just immediately took off. And the next thing I know, I was touring around the world doing it. And then as I toured and I listened to the stories of women, I began to hear, and what the play did, it would provoke more and more women to tell me their stories. And most women were telling me stories that involved violence in one way or another. You know, being beaten, being raped, being incested, being humiliated. And it was really overwhelming. So in 98, I got a group of women together and I said, well, how could we use this play to end violence against women and girls? And we started V-Day, the global movement to end violence. And we did one performance in New York City with fabulous actors from Whoopi Goldberg to Susan Sarandon to Lily Tomlin to Glenn Close. And we thought that was going to be it, you know? And it just launched. You know, we were going to raise money for local groups and we were going to bring attention. And it that night just rocked the city. And we knew we were onto something much bigger. And that was 15 years ago, and that was the beginning of this movement, which is now, through 1 Billion Rising, is now spread to 207 countries, and the play's been done in 140 countries, and we've raised actually $100 million to end violence against women and girls, and, you know, and it's growing, and it's growing and growing. So it's definitely the little vagina that could.
It's so interesting, too, that when we put the performance on in Petaluma, and the woman, Julia Schneider, got us all together, we suddenly realized that not only were we putting on a play, but we were also going to help raise money for a local nonprofit, which was part of the requirement. And that was such a brilliant idea to have groups putting on the play and also supporting local groups. How did you come up with that idea? I mean, that is so inspiring.
Well, I've been an activist most of my life, and I thought to myself, either I can keep this play as a purely commercial venture, or I can allow groups, you know, and support the groups on the ground who are doing the crucial work of ending violence against women every day, who are always hard-pressed for funds and resources. And the play can become a tool that supports that women's movement. And it just felt like such a better thing to do, you know. And, you know, it really has worked. It really has become self-empowerment philanthropy, and I think a lot of young women at colleges, I think V-Day's been at 900 colleges, a lot of women at colleges and community groups, it's the first time they ever do any activist activity. And it's a doorway for them. They really become activists or social workers or mayoral candidates or leaders as a result of it, which I find very exciting.
No, I mean, that is absolutely wonderful. You know, we're curious, do you have is the Vagina Monologues in any different languages? Like, do you have a play in Spanish or any other languages?
Yes, it's been translated into 49 languages.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, and it's been done just about everywhere. I mean, only a few countries haven't done it.
Well, congratulations. I mean, you brought a great body of work, and I can't tell you
how much
I appreciate it. It's just amazing. Well, let's start talking about this wonderful, wonderful tour that you're taking. My goodness, and after reading your book, I'll tell you, the book is I have to say, is extraordinarily, and I have to emphasize, extraordinarily honest and open, and really gives a vivid picture of actually what you went through as a woman fighting cancer, and just finding out what was happening with you was just amazing. And here you are traveling 19 cities. I mean, after reading the book, and I was thinking, where does this woman get her energy and her tenacity? And also, I know that you're going to be here in the northern part of California. You're going to be performing, I believe, in Berkeley, California at the
KPFA tonight in Oakland.
Yeah, right, in Oakland. You'll be doing a fundraiser for them, and then you're going on to San Francisco. You're going to be at the Grace Cathedral, and then you'll be right down the street on Wednesday it's the Dominican College campus bookstore called Book Passages, that's located in San Rafael. Let's talk a little bit about the book. What inspired you? Tell us a little bit about the story. And when you first discovered that you had cancer, I know it was just amazing how impacting it was to you. So can you give us a little background on that?
I think, as I said about this book, it kind of came straight from my body. I feel sometimes my body wrote this book. There was the diagnosis, the treatment, and then there was the book. And I think, you know, one of the things the book looks at and talks about is for many, many years I felt exiled from my body. I felt very disassociated from myself and very separate. And that began at a very young age when I was sexually abused and very physically abused by my father. My body became this landscape, a very contaminated landscape of shame and self-hatred and humiliation and, you know, a lot of projected badness. And it was a place I didn't want to live in. And I think so much of my life has been this journey to try to get back to my body, to get back in. Tried various means, whether it was promiscuity or anorexia or even performing the vagina monologue helped momentarily. But it wasn't until I got stage 3/4 cancer that I really landed in my body. I woke up after a 9-hour surgery and I was suddenly body, your body. And as terrifying as it was also so relieving to be in my body for the first time. And that really began what I'm kind of referring to as the cancer conversion process, where every day something would begin to happen to my body, whether it was infections or chemo or, you know, whatever it was, that forced me deeper and deeper into connection with my own body, but also more importantly with the world, with nature, with my sister, with other people. And I realized so much of my disconnect from nature and from so many things in my life had come from my disconnect from my own body.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of the most beautiful parts of the book was when you talk about the tree, this simple piece of nature that brought you so far within your recovery. Can you talk a little bit about, I want to describe the tree. It was just a simple tree with some leaves on it that was outside your window. And it seemed like that particular experience, along with the wonderful experience of your sister Lou and you, which really had a lot to do with your healing. Can you talk a little bit about that tree? I mean, it was just magnificent.
Yeah, it was, when we're alienated from our bodies, we're very much alienated from the earth. And I've been a city person and lived in a concrete city for a long time. And at a certain point after my operation, I got a very bad intral abdominal infection and lost a lot of weight and couldn't eat and couldn't function and couldn't really lift my head. And I got put back in the hospital to get drained again. And I was put into this room, and the only thing outside my window was this tree. And I thought, oh my God, I will go mad. I can't work. I can't think. I can't write. I can't do anything. And the first day, I looked at it, and I was like, okay. And then the second day, I began to see the tree. And by the fourth day, I was in love with the tree. And the fifth and sixth day, I was into branch and bark and trunk. And I think around day 7, I became the tree. And it was just an amazing journey, that tree, back to understand the gorgeous power, the beauty, the generosity of trees. And I think by the time I left that hospital, again, it was like this melting away of this wall that had separated me.
That, to me, was just such an amazing story. I think I read it 2 or 3 times because I went outside in my garden and I start looking at the trees and I start noticing the different leaves and the way they move. It was just amazing. And another thing that was inspiring to me was your relationship with your sister Lou. I could really relate to that personally because I had a 2010 when I turned 70. I think that's what really bothered me. Oh my goodness, I'm an older woman now. I had a very strained or interesting relationship with my sister Evelyn, and through that illness we became very, very close, and it looked like the same thing happened with you and your sister Lou. And another thing that was very interesting is that I was reading that part about that girl when you talk about your past, and I could really relate to that too with my sister, who was an observer. In fact, my sister always said to me, you know, I didn't do those things because I knew what was going to happen to you, so I kind of avoided them. And she always said that she was the silent one. So how did that impact you, having your sister, and how was that with the healing with your family because you were able to develop that relationship with her?
Well, I think when you come from a broken or wounded family, when you have a tyrannical father, I mean, one of the things that all tyrants do is they divide and conquer, right? So my father was really good at setting my brother and sister and I up against each other and making us each hate each other or feel jealous or feel less than or feel like they were the loved ones or the one left out. And so we had a very tortured relationship our whole lives. And I hadn't really seen my sister for years when I got sick. We hadn't spoken. And when I came out of surgery, she was standing over me, and I thought, oh, my God, I died. I'm in heaven, and now my sister and I are united. But, in fact, she had come to take care of me. And it was just this beautiful process, because I think we were finally able to give each other what we wanted. All my life, all my sister's life, I was the big, boisterous, suck-up-all-the-air older sister, and she was a quiet introvert who kind of disappeared. And when I was sick, I was too tired to talk. And what I could do was listen, so I asked a lot of questions and I got to know her. And I think for my sister, when I was a child, she had to witness my being abused on a daily basis and feel absolutely powerless to help me. And she, during my sickness, got to take care of me. So I listened to her and she took care of me. There was a certain point during those chemo months when we looked at each other and we realized we had completely fallen in love with each other. And it was absolutely one of the most beautiful things.
I don't know what better words to put in, but what a beautiful, open, honest story, the whole book. The book takes you on a journey. I mean, and you can't help but go on the journey with you. One of the things that was so amazing, too, that as far as I'm concerned, really describes your dedication to the work that you're doing, to bringing to the world what is happening with women and violence around the globe. I mean, I was just stunned when I read the chapter or the part of the information that you were giving about rape camps and all kinds of different things that are happening in the Congo. It was just, it was heartbreaking to me. I mean, I know I do women's spaces. I want to introduce women to other women so they know how important it is that we all work together. But what really demonstrated who you are as a human being and how much strength you have within, which was amazing to me, is the fact that you called this woman called Mama C in the Congo. You called her every single day, no matter what was happening to you. Can you talk a little bit about that? First of all, who was Mama C, and why was that so important for you to do on a daily basis?
I think 7 years ago, I was invited to the Congo by a man named Dr. Denis Mukwege, who's an extraordinary OBGYN and runs something called Pansy Hospital in Eastern Congo, where the war is really quite extreme. And he invited me there because of the horrible femicide that was going on to women in the midst of this economic war, which is being fought for the minerals of the Congo by outside countries and foreign nationals. And he invited me there to listen to the stories and see if V-Day could be of service. And when I went there, I heard stories and I saw things that were beyond my imagination, beyond anything I'd ever heard. I think we decided immediately that V-Day was going to focus our attention there. And so we asked the women, and we spent months asking the women what they wanted. And what they wanted was a place where they could heal, where they could be nurtured, where they could be educated, where they could learn skills, but where they could become leaders and they could graduate and go back to their communities and transform their communities. And so we were building City of Joy in Bukavu, and we were in the midst of this incredibly difficult, arduous building process in a place that has no electricity, no water, no roads. And it was supposed to open in May, and they discovered the tumor inside me in March. So for me, I knew that I had to live to keep, you know, keep my promise. The City of Joy is owned by the women of Congo and directed by them and determined by them. But my job is to help find resources and you know, and support. And I was going to be damned if I was going to die before I fulfilled that promise. And I'll tell you something. It was really listening to Mama C, her name is Christine Schuler, describer, who is the most extraordinary woman, one of the bravest women in brilliant women who run City of Joy. And I knew if she thought I was dying and if she didn't think I was going to make it, she was going to be despaired. So So I had to keep myself together, and that got me, to be honest with you, to make this decision. I was going to live and to fight, you know, with my life. And I often say it was the women of Congo who saved my life. And when I was able to go back there at the end of all the operations and sections and chemo and be with the women and see the City of Joy standing there, it was, you know, and open the gates and open the doors to women. It was one of the great moments of my life, without a doubt.
Well,
and, you know, and marriage. And we've now graduated three classes. We just started our fourth. There's 90 women there every 6 months. They're doing unbelievably well. They come with, you know, bullet wounds and missing body parts and nightmares and children they're trying to love who are products of rape. And they leave gorgeous and strong and just visionary and beautiful, and I don't know. It's just it's the City of Joy is my favorite place in the world, without a doubt.
Well, you should be very, very proud of yourself. You know, and as you were talking, I was just thinking, like, here in Sonoma County, we're having such issues around immigration and families being separated and some of the horrors that's going on. And I hope that my women listeners out here are hearing your story, because, you know, one woman, I mean, you are a single woman who had a vision and an idea, and you were able to gather people around you. And I think people need to understand that, you know, there's a real interesting passage in your book. It's called The Second Wind. I mean, that is so incredible to me. When you talk, you know, you don't know how to, you know, you don't know how to end the war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You don't know where governments end and corporations begin, and you go on and on about things. But the most important thing you say is that you as an individual, we as women, can make a difference. Would you agree with that?
Oh my God, we can make a huge difference. I mean, look at 1 billion rising. It was just this energy or call that got circulated around the planet. And 1 billion women and men rose up on February 14th in 207 countries and demanded through dance and through their bodies an end to violence against women. And I think we just can't underestimate the power we have in each of us to change and transform our world. And it's just a question of going out and doing it and not double-guessing yourself and not doubting yourself and not, you know, putting all those stipulations on yourself and worry. Just do it. Just do it. Have a big idea and make it happen. And I think part of it, the book, hopefully, is this wake-up call to come back into our bodies and to come out of this state of ongoing somnolence that we live in, which is being neither here or there or half asleep, half awake, where we don't pay heed to everything that's happening around us. And as a result of it, we don't respond to it, which is demanding of our response.
Well, you know, it's amazing. One of the things you say about there are 10 principles, but 3 of the 10 principles governing the City of Joy are to tell the truth, to stop waiting to be rescued. I love that. Stop waiting to be rescued, and to give away what you want the most. Well, you know, Eve, this has been an extremely inspiring interview, I have to say. I mean, it's just such a joy to talk to you and to know that you're going to be in our area. And as we end, is there anything special that you would like to tell our listening audience? Anything that you would, you know, like to? And I'm going to do a little break here. I'm going to reintroduce you to our audience. You know, this is Elaine B. Holtz. It's a special program here on Women's Spaces. I am talking with Eve Ansler, an author, a playwright, and an activist who was very well known for the Vagina Monologues and is now in Northern California on a 19-city tour to talk about her book, In the Body of the World, which is her journey with cancer. And the reason I say journey with cancer, because if you read the book, you see that no matter what hits you in life, it's your attitude, it's the way you move through it, and also it's the loving support of people around you that make life possible. And it's just really exciting that even to just be talking to you, Eve. So as we end the show, is there anything special? And also, we are going to end the show by honoring you by playing the song Break the Chain, which was from the 1 Billion Rising, which, by the way, I'll tell you something. We've been dancing with that song in Sonoma County ever since it came out. Is there anything special that you'd like to tell our listeners?
I just feel like dancing is such an amazing way to transform energy, and I've really learned after the women in Congo that It's how we turn pain to power and suffering to joy. And I think, you know, I think if we're really going to wake up and transform human existence, we have to really have our posse and our group, particularly women friends, have our back, because that's how we get courage. So everybody needs a posse and everyone needs to dance. That's what I would say.
I think that's such good advice. You know, I've danced all my life myself, and I know that for a while when I couldn't dance, it was just so awful. Well, Eve Ansler, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces. Thank you, Eve.
Okay, thank you.
A woman in your life, but she's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.